Penguin Random House Audio presents Hell to Pay, How the Suppression of Wages is Destroying America, by Michael Lind. Read for you by Joe Knezovich. Ostensibly, the demand for cheap labor is made in the interest of improvement and general civilization. It tells of increased wealth and of marvelous transformations of the old and the worthless into the new and valuable. It speaks of increased traveling facilities and larger commercial relations, of long lines of railway graded and meandering canals constructed, of splendid cities built and flourishing towns multiplied, of rich mines developed and useful metals made abundant, of capacious ships on every sea abroad, and of amply cultivated fields at home. In a word, it speaks of national prosperity, greatness, and happiness. Alas, however, this is but the outside of the cup and the platter, the beautiful marble without, with its dead men's bones within. Cheap labor is a phrase that has no cheering music for the masses. Those who demand it and seek to acquire it have but little sympathy with common humanity. It is the cry of the few against the many. When we inquire who are the men that are continually vociferating for cheap labor, we find not the poor, the simple, and the lowly. Not the class who dig and toil for their daily bread, not the landless, feeble, and defenseless portion of society, but the rich and powerful, the crafty and scheming, those who live by the sweat of other men's faces, and who have no intention of cheapening labor by adding themselves to the laboring forces of society. Frederick Douglass, Cheap Labor, New National Era, August 17, 1871. Power is the flower of organization. A. Philip Randolph. Foreword. What do falling fertility in the United States, a plague of loneliness and lack of friendship, bitter conflicts over racial and gender identity, and a politics of culture wars and moral panics have to do with one another? Like cracks in a building that radiate up from a crumbling foundation, these dystopian trends are influenced, directly or indirectly, by an underlying factor: the existence of too many bad, low-wage jobs in America. A building's foundation can erode for a long time before an earthquake or a fire exposes the extent of the structural decay. In the same way, a series of external shocks, the Great Recession, the COVID-19 pandemic and the economic contraction it produced, and the surging inflation caused by the economy's reopening, and the war in Ukraine, have illustrated rifts within American society with more fundamental causes. Today's American crisis is the confluence of five crises: a demographic crisis, a social crisis, an identity crisis, a political crisis, and an economic crisis that aggravates the other four. The demographic crisis is one shared with many industrial societies and some developing nations: the collapse of family formation and birth rates. The social crisis is the growth of personal isolation, manifest in everything from declining numbers of friends to the withering away of membership organizations and communal institutions. The identity crisis involves the weaponization of identity politics in the zero-sum battle for jobs and status. And the political crisis has arisen from the replacement of the transactional politics of the past with culture wars on the right and moral panics on the left. All four of these crises are worsened, if not caused, by the fifth, an underlying economic crisis. That is the argument of this book. The economic crisis is the existence of too many jobs with low wages, no benefits, and bad conditions in present-day America. America's bipartisan elite has its own preferred solution to the problem of too many low-paying jobs: learn to code. That trite phrase became a bitter joke during the Great Recession of the 2010s. For a generation, journalists and opinion columnists at elite media outlets, informed by the conventional wisdom among academic economists, had condescendingly told laid-off automobile workers in the Midwest and other struggling American workers that instead of complaining that their jobs had been offshored to low-wage workers in Mexico or China, they should move to Silicon Valley and learn to code. As waves of layoffs swept through the media industry, Journalists who announced on their personal Twitter accounts that they had lost their jobs found themselves mocked by critics who told them, "Learn to code." The "learn to code" cliche persists because it is shorthand for the dominant way that America's elite thinks about work and wages in the United States. According to the simple-minded version of economics that is all that most policymakers and pundits know, in the private sector, the labor market automatically sets the wages of all workers depending on their productivity, which in turn depends on their skills. Hedge fund managers and corporate executives who earn a million times more than janitors have skills that are valued by impersonal, competitive markets vastly more than our janitorial skills. This is a myth. It could be called a lie if it were not for the fact that its beneficiaries, including those hedge fund managers and corporate executives, devoutly believe this theory that happens to justify their high incomes. The truth is less flattering to the economic elite. Society would collapse if all low-paid workers in healthcare, retail, waste management, and service industries upskilled for jobs in the knowledge industry. In reality, wages are determined largely by the relative bargaining power of workers and employers. And right now, that bargaining power is at an all-time low. Worker bargaining power in the United States did not die because of globalization or technological innovation. American worker power was murdered by American business and its allies among American politicians and policymakers. The strategy of American business, encouraged by neoliberal Democrats and libertarian conservative Republicans alike since the 1970s, has been to lower labor costs in the United States, not by substituting labor-saving technology for workers, but by schemes of labor arbitrage. Offshoring jobs in some sectors when possible to poorly paid workers in other countries, and substituting unskilled immigrants willing to work for low wages in other sectors, like meatpacking and construction, and farm labor, and commercial and residential cleaning. American business has also driven down wages by smashing unions in the private sector, which now have fewer members, a little more than 6% of the private sector workforce, than they did under Herbert Hoover. Another wage-suppressing tactic of American business is replacing full-time employees with benefits with part-time contractors or gig workers with lower wages and no benefits. The result of deunionization, offshoring of industry, and mass low-wage immigration has been the growth in the United States of a category of workers known as the working poor, who are paid too little to survive without dependence on means-tested public assistance or welfare programs like food stamps and housing vouchers. Perversely, these welfare programs, including the Earned Income Tax Credit, EITC, a wage subsidy for the working poor, indirectly encourage employers in sweatshop sectors like retail to pay low wages. Why not pay low wages as long as the taxpayers guarantee that low-wage workers and their children will not starve? This explains why the United States, which has lost much of its manufacturing to China and other countries, remains a world leader in one area: creating bad jobs with low wages and inadequate hours and no union representation. Since the 1960s, as a share of private sector non-supervisory jobs, goods-producing jobs that once provided steady jobs at good wages have shrunk from 42% to 17%. Their share of the private sector workforce has been replaced almost exactly by job growth in service sectors with bad jobs and low wages: retail, leisure and hospitality, administrative, waste management, and healthcare and social assistance services. The low wages and poor working conditions of these jobs can be directly traced back to the decimation of unions by big business. Most of the jobs that the U.S. economy has created for the past few decades have paid poorly. That isn't going to change soon. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS, the three jobs with the most projected growth in numbers between now and 2029 are home health and personal care aides, $25,280 a year, fast food and counter workers, $22,740, and cooks, restaurant, $27,790. Of the 12 occupations in the United States that the BLS projects will have the greatest numerical growth in workers over...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?